and welcome to Talking Aussie Books, a weekly podcast bringing readers and writers of Australian fiction together. I'm Claudine Tinellis. As an avid reader and passionate advocate for Australian fiction, I make it my mission to spotlight local talent. So if you're looking for your next read or simply want to learn more about the Australian literary scene, this podcast is for you. Grab yourself a cuppa, sit back and relax. Listeners, it's always a good day when best-selling Australian author Sandy Dockett is in the house. Now, for those of you who might be new to the podcast or new to Sandy's books, Sandy Dockett burst onto the Australian literary scene in 2018 with her debut title, The Kookaburra Creek Cafe, followed by The Cottage at Rosella Cove, The Banksia Bay Beach Shack and The Wattle Island Book Club. Each of those stories have cemented Sandy's reputation as a masterful storyteller, weaving past and present timelines together in heart-wrenching, tear-inducing tales. Sandy's novels spotlight both the joys and challenges of living in small communities, along with some fascinating, often little-known aspects of Australia's history. As a testament to the power of Sandy's stories, Australia has voted Sandy's books onto Better Reading's top 100 3 years in a row, a magnificent achievement to be sure. And so without further ado, let me welcome Sandy back to the podcast today to chat about her brand new novel, The Red Gum River Retreat. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Claudine. Thank you for such a wonderful introduction. I've never sounded so good.
Now, I wanted to say congratulations on yet another brilliant novel. How are you feeling now it's out in the world and what kind of feedback are you getting?
Oh, we're in that weird period of time where the books come out. It's been out just over a week now. And so you're full of excitement that your book baby's out there, but nerves because how is it going to be received? And you're frantically doing events and interviews. And it's just, yeah, it's a strange time, but a really good time in the process. So far, the reviews have been pretty good. I'm pretty happy with it, but, you know, time will tell.
Does it get any easier, Sandy, the waiting for those reviews to come in or anticipation of how books will be received?
I've got some bad news for any aspiring writers listening, Claudine. It does not, well, not for me anyway, it doesn't get easier. In fact, I think it gets harder because you know what to expect and you know what those expectations are from your publisher. And, you know, when your debut comes out, you're just so thrilled to have a book on the shelf that the rest of it doesn't kind of matter. But, you know, now it is a business. I'm five books in and it is a business. It's a wonderful business and it's a passion, but you are very aware of what those reviews mean. And so I think there's probably, yeah, I think it's harder. Yeah, sorry to burst that bubble for anyone listening.
So, Sandy, the thing that never ceases to amaze me about your writing is your knack for writing intriguing and emotional stories. And the Red Gum River Retreat is no exception. So I wondered, could you tell me more about the story and also what inspired you to write it?
So the Red Gum River Retreat is a story about single mum Sarah and her daughter Melody, and they suffer quite a significant trauma, which leaves them both physically and emotionally scarred. And one night, after a particularly bad nightmare from Melody, Sarah goes up into the attic and she discovers a photo album from her grandmother Rosalie. And inside that album is a series of photos taken from the snapshots from Home League in and around the town of Red Gum River. And this is a part of Rosalie's life that Sarah knew absolutely nothing about. She knew her grandmother was a famous photojournalist, but didn't know anything about this period in her life. So she starts to do a little bit of digging and she discovers that Red Gum River is the home to a music retreat that might be able to help Melody through her trauma. So the three ladies pack off and head to Red Gum River Retreat, and they discover there that there's a lot more to do with the past that affects the present than any of them could ever have realized.
Yeah, fantastic. And so, I mean, you and I have spoken about this before, but you had some quite distinct pieces of inspiration for writing this story. Can you elaborate on that a little?
Yeah, so the first spark of inspiration was watching Antiques Roadshow one Friday night on the couch with a tub of ice cream. That's the exciting life of an author. And a woman came on with a photo album and she had these snapshots from Home League pictures in there. And it was a part of our war history that I had heard nothing about. I didn't know anything about this period in history. And during World War One and World War Two, soldiers would request photos from home, something to give them a bit of comfort, maybe a picture of the dog or their wife or the children or the house. And the local YMCA chapters would send out local photographers to take those pictures, and then they'd be sent back to the boys on the front. And I decided to do a little bit of research. It just sort of sparked in me when I saw this on the TV, you know, why didn't we know about this and exactly what it was? So that was the first spark of inspiration, and that informed Rosalie's backstory. And then the second spark was, again, my very exciting life, walking outside my local Coles shop, and there were two old guys busking, and they had to have been in their 80s, and I still see them every now and then. And one was playing the banjo and the other one was playing a saxophone, I think it was. And I just stood back and watched these two old fellas busking, and I thought, oh, there's got to be a story here. And as you would know, Claudine, as writers, we're first and foremost observers. So to sit back and watch how people are interacting is something that we do quite a lot. And so my brain just started ticking over. Okay, who are these guys? Are they best friends? Are they brothers? Did they serve in the war? Did they love the same woman? Tick, 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 tick. All these things were going off in my head, making up a complete life for these boys. And so that was the second spark. And they became Edward and Albert in the story, in the historical thread and in the present thread as well. So they were the two first sparks, but that's not enough to make a story. There's usually a few extra ingredients that have to be mixed in. And one of those ingredients this time around was the pandemic and, you know, the fear of keeping your loved ones safe when it first hit and we didn't know quite what was going on and what to expect. And I have a daughter with an underlying medical condition, so I was in complete panic mode, and that heightened sense of everything we go through as a mother, you know, wanting to keep our kids safe, the guilt that we carry with us 24/7, all of that was heightened. And so that informed Sarah, our other main character.
Brilliant. And I think that does offer quite a bit of insight to aspiring writers and authors out there about how seemingly distinct ideas can form a cohesive story.
Yeah, I had no idea that those three things were going to come together to make the Red Gum River Retreat. I do have an ideas book that I jot things down. So after I'd seen that episode of Antiques Roadshow, I wrote it down. And, you know, after I had this, you know, imaginary story about these two boys busking, I wrote that down. And yeah, it's interesting how somehow the universe makes it all come together.
Sandy, in the Wattle Island Book Club, you introduced us to the ancient Japanese art of kintsugi. It was a beautiful theme that you wove throughout the story. And in the Kookaburra Creek Cafe, it was baking. And now in the Red Gum River Retreat, it's music as therapy. So intriguing to me. Had you heard about this before? And did you know that you wanted to write about it before the characters came along? Or was this more of a character-driven issue?
Yeah, the music retreat came quite late in the process. It wasn't something I was aware of, although music as therapy has been around for decades, probably centuries even. It's only now sort of getting some traction in the mainstream medical professions. So it was something that I hadn't really thought of, although there was always a strong music theme running through the book. The retreat came about quite by accident. I'd been pitching the story to my publisher, and she wanted some alliteration in the title, and we played around with a whole bunch of things. So I was throwing all sorts of ideas at her, and the one that she liked the most was the Red Gum River Retreat. And then I panicked because I didn't know how I was going to fit a retreat into the story. And as you can tell, I am not someone who plans anything when I write. So panic mode hit, and I knew I did not want to write about a wellness retreat. That has been done before by names far bigger than myself, and it's not something that was of particular interest to me to write about a wellness retreat. So then I had to sort of thrash around some ideas of what kind of a retreat, what other than a wellness retreat, what could it be? And so I went out to our writer friends and asked for a few ideas, and ended up hitting on a music retreat. And once that hit, the whole thing just came together.
Trauma is a big theme in this novel. It appears in both timelines, and it certainly gives the reader pause to think about the different ways trauma can affect people. Why did you want to explore this theme in the context of this novel?
Again, this is something that I didn't set out to do from the beginning. I never pick the themes, so to speak, before I start a novel. That is very much driven by my characters and where they take me on their journey. So I had no idea that trauma was going to be such a big theme in this story before I started. It just sort of, it evolved as the story evolved. And again, it's one of those things where the universe is obviously playing a hand, and it just turned out that pretty much all of the main characters have some sort of trauma that they are dealing with. But once I knew that that's where we were going, then I was really happy to explore it, and to explore it quite deeply, I think, in the novel, and the different forms, as you said, that it can take. Because while all of them do deal with trauma, they're dealing with it in a different way, and the trauma itself is very different, and it's manifesting in different ways as well.
As mentioned earlier, your novels are characterised by glimpses into Australia's history, a bygone era brought to life on the page in such vivid and memorable detail. Now, in this book, you take us back to World War II, and you show us what life was like, not only for the soldiers at war, but for those who stayed behind all the way till the end of the war in the Pacific. So why this period, Sandy? What drew you to this time?
Well, obviously with the theme of the snapshots from home league, I had to either pitch it as a World War One or World War Two, because that was when that was in operation. And timeline wise, it had to fit that it was World War Two, because I wanted the past characters to still be here in the present. And if it was World War One, time wise, it simply wouldn't be possible. So that's when I hit on World War II. And World War II is an area that has been explored a lot in literature, particularly in the last few years. So finding something that perhaps wasn't as familiar to readers was what I had to do. And the snapshots were fantastic for that. And then with Edward and Albert, placing them in World War II, you know, were they going to be in Europe? Were they going to be in the Pacific? Whereabouts in the Pacific were they going to be? That was something that I had to explore. And I ended up landing them on Tarakan Island. And that is something that, again, I didn't know much about growing up. And it was a way for me to explore that.
So what research did you have to do to bring this era to life?
Yeah, quite a bit. Always have to do more research than I think I have to do. But it's also the fun part of the procrastination part of writing, because you get stuck down these rabbit holes that you can't dig yourself out of sometimes. So I had to research what life was like on Tarakan Island for the Australians and for the soldiers. And I found a really wonderful book, which I do make mention of in my acknowledgements if you want to look up which book it was, which helped me really inform Edward's point of view. He has a point of view, very brief ones throughout the novel, but hopefully capturing what it was like for the boys on Tarakan Island. And then I also had to research what it was like for the characters that stayed behind. So Rosalie working at the newspaper in Red Gum River, and, you know, finding out what support services were around, whether the rations were big or small, all those sorts of things.
So you've already talked about the snapshots from Home League, and yeah, I agree with you. It was also something that I didn't know much about, and it never ceases to amaze me that fiction can highlight such incredible and often little known aspects of our history. When you're writing, is it something that you specifically think to yourself that I would like to spotlight something that we don't know much about? Or is it more about, you know, serendipitously pulling together different ideas?
There is a lot of serendipity that's involved, but it's also about not so much highlighting something for the readers, but finding out something for myself. As the author, you know, I want to be interested by what it is that I'm writing. If I'm not interested, you're not going to be interested. It'll show on the page. And so it's finding those little nuggets for myself that go, oh, that's really interesting. I want to explore that. And fiction is a fantastic way to get into that. And we've seen that particularly with the female historical fiction writers recently, exploring the world of women in these periods that, you know, we know very little about. And Sasha Walsley is putting out a book later this year, and she's going back into World War One with the snapshots from Home League. So it's interesting that we've both hit on that at the same time.
You've hit the nail on the head in that respect. Over the past few years, I have just been flabbergasted at the amount of fiction that women are writing that highlight women's experiences that have effectively been written out of history.
Well, history has typically been written by middle-aged white men, and they focus on their stories, which is what they should do. And it's only recently that women are actually finding their voice to tell our stories and our ancestors' stories and what role they played. And their roles were significant.
I couldn't agree with you more. Sandy, you are adept at including shocking plot twists in your novels. I think we may have spoken about this the last time you were on the podcast, but like most of your other books, there was a development in this book that I didn't see coming and left me brokenhearted. Tell me about how you prepare to write these scenes, and do you get emotional when you're writing them, or is it more about how best can I shock my readers?
Well, this is going to sound really, really evil of me. I get excited when I write these scenes. Part of the excitement, though, is because, as I mentioned, I don't plan my novels. So I don't know these scenes are coming. And so that's part of the excitement for me as a writer. So when I'm like, oh my gosh, this is where this is going, and I get all tingly and excited. And I don't want to, well, I guess I do want to break my reader's heart. Sorry. I shouldn't.
Flash.
What we want to do as writers is make our readers feel something, whether that's joy, sadness, excitement, fear, depending on the genre that you're writing in. If there's an emotional reaction, then we've done our job properly. So when my story and my characters take me to that place where I didn't know this was coming and I realize that's where we're going, that's why I get so excited by it.
Setting, one of the many memorable aspects of your storytelling, Sandy. More particularly, it's how you evoke a sense of place. So much so, I believe that many of your readers are convinced your settings are real places, but they're not, are they?
No, they're not. And I often get slightly angry emails from readers saying, I looked up Banksia Bay and it's not real. How can you do this to me? Again, that means I've done my job properly. But no, they're not. They're slightly idealized versions of places that I may have seen in my youth. I grew up in the country and I love country areas. And I like the freedom of them not being real places. And I can, you know, make them whatever I need them to be to fit the story. But yeah, quite a few times I myself have gone, gee, I'd like to live there.
Well, I think I'd like to live in Red Gum River. So tell me about that setting. How did you come up with this setting, and were you inspired by a particular place or places for this one?
No, and I try not to be. As I said, it's more of an amalgamation and an imagination of what an idyllic river town might be like. You know, maybe there's a little bit of Bellingen in there, a little bit of the Hawkesbury in there. It's those sorts of things that come to me. I have a water theme running through my novels. For anyone that has read them will know, we've got a creek, we've got a cove, we've got an island, we've got a beach, and you know, I was sort of sticking with that water theme, and I knew that this one was going to be on a river, and then I get kind of lost in building this little world around this river, and where would I like to live and what would it look like for me?
Now, you've spoken a little bit about motherhood and mother guilt earlier. Specifically, what's impressive about this book is how you've spoken about mothers prioritizing their children's needs ahead of their own. And I think this reflects the guilt which seems to run quite deep in your novels and your writing. We saw this kind of guilt in both Rosalie's and Sarah's actions. Why was this something you wanted to explore in the story?
I think because it's universal to mothers. I know I certainly suffer from mother guilt quite significantly, and I know a lot of mothers do as well. And I think it's something we don't talk about enough. We don't normalize it. I'm a little bit like Sarah in that I try to take everything on my own shoulders and not seek out help. And that is not a healthy way to deal with it. And it's interesting that when I handed in my first draft, my publisher said to me, there's an awful lot of you in Sarah. And that was a bit of an eye opener for me. I hadn't realized that that's what I was doing at the time. But she's right, there is an awful lot of me in Sarah. And I have had those moments that Sarah has where she's so desperately trying to help Melody and so desperately wanting to make everything okay again that she becomes paralyzed with indecision because she's so afraid of making the wrong decision on behalf of her child. She doesn't make any decisions at all. And that was something that I felt definitely during the pandemic, trying to keep my daughter safe. And it's something that punctuates my life as a mother. And the more we talk about these things and the more that we can show people that A, it's normal, and B, if you surround yourself with the right people, which is part of Sarah's journey in this novel, that you can really help yourself.
So well said. Sandy, if there was one thing you'd like readers to take away from this novel, what would it be?
All I ever aim to do and all I ever want from my readers is for them to enjoy the experience, you know, to have a jolly good read, have some sort of an emotional reaction to it, and just walk away thinking, yeah, I really enjoyed that. Anything above that, if they then talk about some of these issues of mother guilt or PTSD or trauma, anything like that, if they discuss that in a book club or over the water cooler at work, that's an added bonus. Mm. But my objective whenever I'm writing is just to tell a good yarn.
Sandy, we've often chatted about the Australian writing community and how wonderful and supportive it is. And now that we're almost 6 months post the inaugural Northern Beaches Readers Festival, I wondered, has your opinion changed or been enhanced by the experience of hosting that event?
Oh, absolutely enhanced. Absolutely. I've always known that the Australian writing community is a warm and welcoming community and the most supportive community I've ever been a part of. And the festival just highlighted that for me. And, you know, we're still supporting each other, the authors that are at that festival. And it's just it's a really beautiful community to be part of. And I know that I get comments on social media from readers who are like, oh, I can't believe you're supporting other authors and it's really lovely. And I swear they must think it's just for show, that it's just for social media, but it's not. You know, behind the scenes, and you know this as well as I do, Claudine, behind the scenes that support is even stronger than what we show on social media, and it really is a fabulous community.
Now, the NBRF is not back again until 2024. Mm-hmm. But is there anything you'd like to say to listeners about that and where they can go to find out more information?
Yeah, so we're holding our second Northern Beaches Readers Festival in 2024. And you can go to our website, which is www.nbrf.com, and you can find out the information there. We'll be going into full planning mode over the next few months for that. And we will hope to bring you just as good, if not a better festival than we did last year.
Yeah, amen to that. Sandy, with five novels now under your belt, is there any single piece of advice that you would offer to aspiring authors out there based on your experiences with either the writing or the publishing process?
Probably the best piece of advice, and it's not my own. I cannot remember who said this, and I've tried to look it up and I cannot find it, but these aren't my words, but you can't write your first chapter until you've written your last. And that sounds ridiculous, but if you actually think about it, it is so, so true. I know so many aspiring authors who get so focused on honing their first couple of chapters that they never move past those first chapters. And you can't get published in Australia for fiction if you haven't a complete manuscript. There's no point spending all of that time on your first three chapters, because by the time you actually get to the end of the book, those chapters are going to change. So you have to write, and write to the end. Don't get stuck at that very beginning, because you'll be stuck there forever.
Sandy, can you give us any kind of glimpse as to what's next for you?
What's next for me? Book number 6 is due in frighteningly soon to my publisher. We won't tell her how not far along I am with that. Hopefully she's not listening to this. Hi, Ali, if you are, love you. But that's due in relatively soon, and I will be furiously getting my head down and tail up for that one. It is called, at this point in time, and these things can change, The Lyrebird Lake Ladies' Choir. And it's a story of multi-generations again, past and present, homelessness, and sort of female strength, I guess.
Yeah, wonderful. Lots of alliteration in that title. Ali will be happy.
We do like the alliteration, yes.
Oh, I love it. Sandy, I absolutely love the Red Gum River Retreat. No surprises there. Thank you for another beautiful read, my friend, and hoping it flies off the shelves for you. Thank you for joining me on Talking Aussie Books again today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Claudine, and thank you to your listeners for tuning in.
That's a wrap, folks. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please drop me a line via my webpage at claudinetonellis.com, via Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Alternatively, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Until next time, happy reading!